Welcome to What Would Jane Do? A podcast exploring women's work in cities and urban design. Today we're talking with Hannah Ratzlaff, based in Little Rock, Arkansas in the United States. Hannah is a friend of ours from our graduate program, so we're catching up with her about her new position as exterior design consultant for Main Street, Arkansas, and hearing about how she's learning architecture and historic preservation building by building. Start with, why don't you just tell us who you are and your position and what you do?
So my name is Hannah Ratzlaff. I am basically exterior design consultant for Main Street, Arkansas, which is a state program housed in the Department of Arkansas Parks, Heritage, and Tourism. But it comes from a national movement, the National Main Street Center. I think it's based in Chicago. But it started, I believe, in the 80s, and it is basically a program for economic vitality, revitalization through preservation work of historic commercial districts, so downtowns. So I work with the Arkansas Historic Preservation Program and just basically travel around Arkansas, meet with constituents who own a building downtown, who own several properties, or who are just business owners, and I help them with the redesigns of their facades and just general upgrades like awning replacement or actually more like technical work like fixing brickwork and just kind of educating on historic preservation methods. So that's kind of what I do in a quick verse.
Awesome. Okay, so you recently moved to Little Rock. Can you introduce us to your new city?
Yes, so Little Rock, I had never been to Little Rock before I moved here, except for the interview. And I was in Northwest Arkansas at the time. So Little Rock was kind of this unknown space in the center of the state that I knew housed the state government and was the capital. But other than that, I had no view of what it was, but it's been a total pleasant surprise. It's full of history. It has so many different districts with like different vibes, to use a buzzword. But yeah, it's pretty fun. And I moved here in the summer, so there was a lot of festivals going on. A river runs right above Little Rock and separates it from North Little Rock, which is a different city, but they're interconnected with transportation and partnerships and public spaces. So it's very fun, but it's very fun. And a lot is going on in just like the different hubs of across the city. So it's been a very pleasant move. And I'm living near Central High. I don't know if Caitlin, if you know anything about Central High.
Yeah. Important spot.
What is it?
Tell us.
Yeah, it is. So, its main history comes from the history of segregation and desegregation in the United States. It is the site of, I think, forced desegregation in 1957, where at the Little Rock Nine, there was 9 African-American students who were prevented from entering the building and from the governor, who called in the Arkansas National Guard to prevent them from like segregating. So yeah, pretty significant event. And Central High is just one of the most gorgeous high schools in the U.S., I think. So being right across the street from that and all that history, and they've built museums and they've do tours, and it's just beautiful. And they captured the history, I think, really well. But yeah, I think the president at the time had to federalize the Arkansas National Guard in order to say, no, you're actually there to protect the students who will be entering the school. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you feel like, I mean, living in Birmingham, Alabama, where the civil rights history is so central to the city, does it feel that way in Little Rock, or is it a little more?
It feels this way background. In certain places. You kind of feel like you're going into this zone where it's very important. But once you exit that zone, at least the city to me in general seems a bit nondescript. But when I am here maybe a bit, a little bit longer. I'll kind of get the feel from that. But mostly, I think as you get closer to the historical sites, that's a part of it, but it's not really a part of that I've noticed, like the narrative of the whole city. It's mostly, you can see it in like Daisy Bates Avenue and just kind of markers that something happened here and then asking questions from that. But yeah. Yeah.
So in the time that you've been able to explore the city, tell us about your favorite space.
I think a couple of my favorite places are the River Market District, South Main, the district around South Main, which is actually a Main Street program, and Argenta, which is North Little Rock. I think all of those places kind of have this, they have, it's weird, they have privately funded and owned public spaces that are open to the public. So it's an interesting setup, and they all kind of have a different chorus of stakeholders and partners, and public participation methodology was different. But yeah, there's some pretty cool public spaces, and I tend to get sucked into wherever there's a public space and a coffee shop and a...
How do you compare living in Little Rock to the other places that you have lived before?
Okay, so just culturally, Little Rock is very, it's more Arkansan than Northwest Arkansas is, where I went to university and lived for a bit. Not that Northwest Arkansas is a cosmopolitan center of any sort, but I think Walmart being there, a couple other industries being there, you have a lot of professionals from around the world coming in, and the public infrastructure is different. But here, there's not a lot of different voices here. And that's very interesting to me. But it is very homey, and it is very quiet and slow. And even the city itself, I think, is a bit quiet. So there's like a gentleness, a calm here that feels very, what is a good word? Well, there's a little blissfulness here. Yeah, yeah. And I don't think Oxford was blissful. That was just a very exciting time. And I think the bike riding next to the buses on a very thin, like, I think that was different. That's the image or the feeling that I have when I think of Oxford, is going fast down a hill and trying not to run into the bus.
But that was what I was thinking then as well. So if you compare it to, so it's Oxford in the UK you compare it to. Would you say that Little Rock is pedestrian friendly, or can you take the bikes, or is it very much American city, cars everywhere?
Yes, that's an excellent question. It's very car-centric. I think it is moving in the direction of pedestrian friendly, but there are pedestrian friendly zones. So these districts that I keep talking about, kind of spotted along the main corridor, Main Street, and then in a little other peripheral places. When you get to those places, you can leave your car behind for a couple blocks. The public metro doesn't have near enough stops, so I haven't really checked it out. And I think it's not very far reaching. There's not a lot of buses, but I think it's something that they might be investing a little bit more in. That could change a lot of things. There's a lot of bikers.
Oh, that's nice.
There's a lot of bikers. Yeah. So I think it's in the kind of, it's transitioning like a lot of American cities to actually investing in alternative in like transportation. Mm-hmm. So that's fun, but it's nowhere near. I mean, I live 8 minutes away in a car, and I drive to a parking lot that is like the side of my building, and and it's dislocated from downtown, but the building is right near downtown, but I can't
could you bike
a little bit this
only 8 minutes away.
I would be crossing I'd be crossing 630, the highway. So if I lived on the other side of that, absolutely, but since I live for rent at the south end of 630, then I feel like that would be unpleasant. I've thought about it and then drove a couple times, and I was like, yeah, no.
That's the thing. Sometimes with distance in the U.S., it's like you could feasibly walk or bike it, but it's just that, is that path safe or
pleasant enough to do that on a daily basis.
Right. Yeah, there's just, yeah, distance versus obstacles. Mm-hmm. I don't think people pay attention to how many obstacles are in a biker's actual route when they call this like a bike friendly zone. They're just like measuring the distance and not measuring, all the obstacles. So,
okay. So what have you been working on lately?
Ooh, one project that I'm really excited about that I started on when I first got here was with Ace Hardware location that was in, I think it's in downtown Prairie Grove. It is owned by locals and they have great relationships with like people in the city. They're very mom and pop service sorts of owners, but they took the expanse of three historic buildings. I think were altered in like the 70s or the 80s. And you can tell because it has this big shed awning across the front of the buildings, like completely ignoring any other architectural like features, or maybe even like lobbing some features off. My proposal to that was, of course, remove the shed awning. And it had like one layer of a brick facade on half of just over the storefront area. So it didn't go into the upper facades. On the corner, you have this like beautiful facade that, or upper facade made of like pressed tin metal. The next you have a slip cover. So where they've put like vertical metal, corrugated metal over the top. Mm-hmm. They've taken the stonework off the building. Like you look at a historic photo and you're like, wow, wouldn't have that, like, that would be great to see now, but it's totally shaved off the building. Mm. So there's no kind of, you can only rehabilitate. You can't really bring that back. And then the next building over it was made of stone or like field stone from the area. So you kind of have all these different architectural styles. So what I proposed was mostly having to do with color and having three awnings, keeping the brick, because she didn't want to do anything with removing the brick, because you don't know what you're going to find, because this is somebody else's alterations before you came along. Yeah. And 70s to 90s alterations weren't the friendliest, because they're trying to like streamline everything, just like flatten everything out. So you really don't get it's not up to like pedestrian scale. You don't really get the rhythm of storefronts. You're just like, here's a blank wall, and then here's the sign for the store. And we covered you with a residential looking expansive awning. So that proposal, this was early on in this job. So it was super encouraging. I was like, oh, I'm good. I don't need any more praise after this. Like, good for the year. I belong here. So we're all good. Yeah. The store owner was super jazzed because it didn't cost as much as she was thinking. There wasn't that many alterations to what's already there. It was mostly like painting and removing the awning and then doing like three separate awnings to kind of segregate the storefronts or identify the storefronts and bring them down to scale so that when you're walking by, you feel that rhythm. So I have a lot of projects like that. And my services are free to people who are in the Main Street district. Whoever doesn't need an architect for something, like it's pretty straightforward painting and just a couple other things. They can just take that to a construction team and go with it. If they're wanting to do like structural shifts, I advise them to like contact a preservation architect. Yeah, so that's something I'm excited about because that hasn't come to the fruition yet. Like these projects take a long time, even at a like lower scale. Just because they are done, they're done by small business owners.
How long would you say are you part of it then from the beginning all the way till the end, or when do you leave them?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Or I guess it's hard to say goodbye. It's like your baby.
I know. I have so many babies out there that are unborn. I was like, just change your awning and I can actually put this on as like a completed project. No. The turnover into different projects is like pretty quick. I do like one or two projects per week. Depending on the size of what they're needing to be done. And if they're using tax credits or grants, like I get way more involved. Just trying to guide them to the right people and make sure they have things in order and don't mess anything up before they apply that would make them ineligible.
So you're just you're guiding them toward the right path or something like that. So you're giving them advice on what to do, and then telling them go to this person to do this, this, and this. Is that it?
Exactly. Yeah, it's mostly, I mean, it's mostly recommendations, and it's conceptual design. It's conceptual design and preservation recommendations that they can come back and, I mean, tons of times people, like, after 2 weeks after the proposal, they look at their email, like, because they're busy on the ground, like, in the weeds of their business. They come back, they're like, oh, I don't quite understand this. Like, how do I explain this to my construction manager, like my team, my construction team? And so I'll kind of get involved at that point, be a little bit of a liaison. But it's really like, I don't get that wonderful, I don't even know if this is wonderful, maybe Stephanie, you can like compare this, where you're involved with a project from conceptualization to implementation, and you go on site and you check up on it. And yeah, I don't really get to have that.
I think it's really interesting what you're doing, because I don't know, for what I have seen, people are scared, like, if you have a client, many of them are scared to go to an architect or an engineer, because maybe they don't talk the same language. So the fact that you're there just, like, being, I don't know what the word that you said, I don't remember, but that
a liaison.
One, I think it's really nice, like, you're translating from one side to the other on what is best for them.
Right, right. And yeah, a lot of times they don't really need an architect. They, I mean, you have different clients. You have clients, you show up, you're like, oh, I have some great ideas for this. I can't wait to tell them about it. And they're like, well, this is the idea I have, and I basically just want you to like validate my feelings. and a lot of times they know their business so well. They're very like visually oriented. A lot of times, like young business owners who do graphic work or just are already into their branding so much that they don't need a lot of education. They just need like, does this look good on this building? Like, are we doing anything that will cost us money later if we do this to the brick, you know?
So like, you have been working, is it in small towns or is it in cities? It's just to have a context.
Yes. So, oh man, there's such a variety of towns and cities that I work with. How you become a part of the Main Street State program is you have to have a historic district first. And then, yeah, you have to have a bundle of people that can be on a board that will dedicate enough time to pursuing what Main Street pursues in their local community. So, yeah, I think we have about 37 cities and towns that we work with. It's fluctuated between in the 30s to the upper 40s over the years, because it's very tailored. The local problem is very tailored to the locality and how they implement that work.
Maybe it only happens in bigger cities, but when you do all of this urban regeneration process, it tends to generate gentrification. But I don't know if that will happen in spaces or in towns that are so little. So do you see that happening, or is it too early to see it?
Oh, no, you can definitely see it. I don't think, yeah, historic preservation, that is not one of the goals, certainly, of historic preservation. I think that has a lot to do with what property owners want to do with their building and what kind of future tenants they want, and where the local city is, who they want to attract. But so the impact of historic preservation and good design downtowns for like a city of 5,000 to 7,000 people, is the impact of that socially is super different from a basically like downtown Little Rock or Fort Smith, you know, where yes, this is deeply needed, but how you then use that and what develops out of that and what residential spaces are offered and what that does to the like property values. It certainly wants to bring the property values up of the residential spaces outside, like right outside the district. So yeah, upgrading a facade means different things in different places for sure.
You have a background in history and then urban design. So what is it like working in historic preservation as someone without a degree in architecture?
Oh, it's, I mean, the amount of knowledge to learn and grasp is just infinite, it feels like. And Yeah, I have, since I work in the historic preservation program, I just have tons of great connections. I can go over to the National Register, sit down, ask a couple questions. It's basically like a lecture worth of education on something very specific. So yeah, I do learn a lot building by building. I think you do that anyways as an mm-hmm. as an architect, or really anything when you get a new position. It's just like all the general knowledge, you know, even the very technical knowledge that you know, when you actually have to apply that.
So you're working with small business owners and doing building by building consultations and conceptualizations and all that. How has that affected how you then view other conceptual design that comes out into the world?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So yeah, as a conceptual designer, I mostly hand illustrate most of my projects, but I also work in Photoshop and SketchUp and other modeling softwares. It has a lot to do with like the architectural imagination. It's explorative and you just test ideas, and they're really good for that. It's like an essential step in a lot of the business owner or property owner's process, because they either have to get approval from a local historic district commission or a design committee, or even, you know, open it up to public or private investment to get buy-in. So that's mm-hmm. kind of crucial to the social feasibility and impact of the project. So, you know, I'm kind of advocating a little bit more of conceptual design, where it's not like, oh, I just illustrated something and, you know, it's pretty, so you should do it. it's really significant to the process of getting it implemented, whether mm-hmm. that's just between me and the constituent, of making sure that what we are imagining together can be a reality for their budget, for their actual like structural feasibility, or is this, if they have other funding going on, is this something that is going to work inside that milieu? So yeah, I think conceptual design plays a huge role in the architectural process. I do have a little bit of criticism with conceptual designs as it's a mode of viewing the imagination, which is great, but I have some criticism with conceptual designs, and I feel like a baby looking up at tons of adults who, you know, is just born and like, what the hell are you guys doing? So I know that a lot of my opinions are, I might not be in the weeds with conceptual design just yet, or, you know, working for corporations with conceptual design. But from a semi-peripheral perspective, yeah, it's sometimes conceptual designs give like a false or distracting presentation of a scheme. Mm-hmm. It's like writing fantasy rather than showing the impacts of a result. So this I find kind of most abundant in corporate schemes or public space renderings, when it's used as like a marketing tool. And it's without authenticity, the true relationship of space or time or sensory experience or light. So for example, when like light and water glow in ways that would never glow in this world. And when the concept is like mm-hmm. populated with people in ways that will not be true once the project is realized, you know, you have all these like happy people running and walking and sitting with their children and just kind of dotted all over the design. Sometimes it's, you know, you're basically covering your design with all of these things as an almost distraction too. Like if you would take those away, is your design still like, mm-hmm. what's the quality of it? So kind of when a project receives immediate pass through in a community, like say it's a streetscape project, when it receives immediate pass-through, because you can write on, oh, no need to analyze this, it's beautiful, so you should just trust it. I think I can, I'm a bit wary of that, of that style because of that. And I'm not saying we should, on principle, like not trust these really beautiful designs, because they're trying to show us what is possible in this space. And I think that's important to keep that spirit, because it's inspiring, especially in places where there's been no walkability. to communicate that, hey, we are making this a safe zone and here's the spirit of what we're trying to do. I think that's nice. And I'm also not saying we shouldn't trust like corporate ideal city designs.
So, okay, before we sign off, tell us something about your city that is giving you hope right now.
Oh, yes. The fact that there are so many public spaces, I kind of mentioned this beforehand, places like the Riverfront Park or in downtown Little Rock or in the Beatrice Garden on South Main or Argenta's new plaza in North Little Rock. You can see a lot of public and private investment in public spaces. And I find that really exciting here. And they are attempting to link them with more public transportation. There's a trolley here that has a pretty good link. It doesn't go all the way to South Main. That I don't know if that's in the works or that's in the dreams, but that would be an excellent. I see a lot of movement towards that and a lot of investment in that. So I think that's exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, it was so good talking to you, Hannah, and hearing about your background and what you're working on and some of the things that you've been learning and like dealing with being in historic preservation. So thanks for talking with us today.
Yes, thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Gracias, gracias, Hannah.
Wow, it was really good to hear from Hannah and hear about the work that she's been doing in her new role with Main Street Arkansas. It was really cool for me to hear some of the behind the scenes nuts and bolts that goes into historic preservation and kind of maintaining and recreating these downtown historic districts. What did you guys think about her work?
I just love that she's using her degree in history and her knowledge in urban design to educate small business owners in historic preservation methods.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, the same with her role as well. Like, you can see how important that type of role is. Because, I mean, overall cities are changing. They've always changed their looks and it feels like right now it's a certain trend of trying to go back to how it was. Maybe in terms of like placemaking, where you want to reach human scale. So an attempt to that, it's to kind of go back to the old layout to have that uniqueness for each and every store. Yeah, it's just like, yeah, as I said, it's a return to the human scale and encouraging street life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like that's kind of where she discusses her view of conceptual design, and it makes so much sense because since she's working with small business owners, for her conceptual design has to be so deeply rooted in reality, because when she completes a project and passes it on, it has to be understandable, attainable, and something that they can actually implement in their downtown.
In a way, what she's doing is really contrasting with architecture nowadays, because the images we see are almost utopian, and her role is more reality-based with an user in mind.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's just so nice to see how she's early in her career and she's so passionate about her role. Like, she comes in with her pair of fresh eyes. At the same time, she talks about the struggles, or not necessarily struggles, but how it is to maybe fear that you don't have all the knowledge that you may need, but you just go along and try your best because you know that you can do it good.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we all have to kind of fight the imposter syndrome that we feel when we're starting out something new. But yeah, like you said, like, you can have fresh eyes and learn from the people that are ahead of you, but also still form important critical opinions about things that have maybe always been done the same way.
For me, this shows that you don't have to be a planner or an urbanist or an architect to generate change in your city.
Thanks for listening to What Would Jane Do? Tune in next time as we continue to explore women in cities and urban design. What Would Jane Do is hosted by me, Kajsa Leon Liljan,
Caitlin Foote,
and Stephanie Ajepasaran.
Together we make up Collectivo Design Group. You can find us at collectivo.com, on Instagram at Collectivo Design, and on Twitter at Collectivo DG. And that's Collectivo with a K.